You're listening to the Tech SEO Podcast with your hosts, Dan Taylor and Anisha Erdmain, bringing you the latest thoughts, opinions, and expert views from leading SEO professionals.
Hi, John. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good to be here.
Good, great stuff. Thank you. I appreciate, obviously, it's evening now in Switzerland, so I do appreciate you taking time out.
No problem.
And I'm not sure how much the last couple of hours you caught, but we've had a lot of JavaScript discussion. Continue on.
Yeah, no, it's. I think JavaScript is a fascinating topic. And it's like so many sites are switching to JavaScript, so it's something where I think the SEO community overall has picked that up and kind of run with it. And it's really cool to see this, I don't know, the whole more technical side of SEO being so much more in the foreground now again.
No, definitely. And especially the newfound relationships we're building with developers and not as much making them allies, but just like having them part of the same party and the skill sets being crossed and learned between us. No, definitely. So just to kick off, so if someone has got to this YouTube live stream and has taken a wrong turn and doesn't know who you are, would you just please introduce yourself for us?
Okay. I'm a Webmaster Trends analyst originally at Google, which means so what we try to do is connect the people who are making websites externally, like people like you who are working on improving websites overall, with the internal teams that are working on search functionality. So that's sometimes people who are working in the crawling, indexing side, sometimes different search features. And by connecting the two sides, we want to make sure that the information that we have internally goes out to you all, y'all, externally. And the information that y'all provide comes back into to the teams internally as well.
My career is definitely over. So for the past few days, I've been reaching out on Slack, Reddit, and Twitter. I'm just basically asking for some questions from the good folks, something which you do day out. And as a community, we do thank you for it, because just the sheer tsunami of notifications you must get. And if you're an inbox zero person, that must be an insurmountable challenge. So what I've done is I've collated some of those questions into sort of more comprehensible ones, and just some ones which I feel a bit more interesting. Also ones which I've not really seen being asked on Twitter that much. So we won't be asking about subfolders and subdomains and other little things like that. So one of the things I wanted to start off with, which is share some insights on, is this is a conversation that comes up a lot, especially with more international clients or clients who obviously work in multiple markets. And it's more the developers who ask this question, and I feel it's just because a lot of the old information might be slightly outdated, or not from Google, but from third parties, and that's around hosting. Because obviously a lot of large companies will have a single website and then build off branches off a single database. How much, and obviously we now have CDNs, we have edge networks, everything else. How much does hosting really have an impact in sort of how Google perceives a site's relevance for specific markets in 2020?
I'd say very little. If it's something where we don't know a lot about the site, then sometimes the hosting gives us a little bit of a guess. But as soon as we know a little bit more about the site, then we can, on the one hand, figure out which locations are relevant on our own. And also we can use a Search Console setting where you can set geo-targeting. And essentially with that information, we have a lot more information than just the hosting location. So it's like from my point of view, I wouldn't worry about the hosting location. I would pick one that works well for you, that's kind of fast, good, strong hosting, that's secure, that's kind of regularly updated, and work with that. And if you're using a CDN, you have essentially hosting everywhere anyway. So from that point of view, the location itself is really secondary.
Okay, no, thank you. So things like obviously Hreflang, over on site signals and things, just make it yourself, hosting good for users, and just let the technical do the heavy lifting. Where we go. Yeah. Thank you very much. So the second one, which I've pulled together, Misty's kind of SEO, also meeting other parts of the development world with cybersecurity. We know that obviously good search results are secure search results, and we know that is part of Google's agenda with pushing HTTPS and making sure transactions are encrypted, especially in the transport layer, and the deprecation of other TLS through Chrome updates, especially. How plausible would it be if, say, in the future, Google to introduce a form of passive scanning to how it crawls websites? Because obviously at the moment there's detection of things like malware, phishing, but with things like the OWASP top 10 being quite easily detectable when fingerprinting the platforms, how feasible is that? Or is it on Google's agenda at all?
I think that's kind of tricky. So one thing we do sometimes do is watch out for CMS versions. So especially if we're aware of bigger security issues in certain CMS versions, and we can recognize that, like in the header of the pages, then that's something we'll flag through Search Console. That's fairly easy. Kind of more intrusive scanning of things like are there XSS issues, those kind of things. That's something which is a bit tricky because you're almost attacking the website by checking to see if something happens there. So that's something where I know the security team would love to do more in that direction, but it's kind of a legal nightmare, I imagine, to navigate that and say, well, like people have to opt in for it. And at the same time, if people are opting in, then they're already aware of a lot of these issues anyway. So it's kind of a tricky situation there. But I don't know. I mean, it depends on how things evolve with regards to security, but it's something I wouldn't say we will never do, but it's tricky to just go out and kind of do, I don't know, security scans of the web to see what all happens.
No, so this kind of follow-ups about amazement, something you said earlier on, because I know there'll be people asking this. So if you can detect the CMS version and you know there's potentially issues with that, which you'll flag by Search Console, would that affect a site's potential ranking performance in any way if you know it's running a potentially friendly CMS?
No. I mean, it's kind of tricky to determine if it's really running that version of a CMS too, because sometimes people will use some kind of static hosting and they'll essentially clone the content of an older WordPress CMS onto static hosting, for example, and then it suddenly it's like, oh, you're running WordPress, but actually you're not running WordPress. So just because it's in the header somewhere doesn't mean that it's really that CMS with that version.
So a soft flag in Search Console, but not a direct ranking impact. No, yeah. Thank you. So one of the third questions, which if this is something I've been asked a lot, and I think it might be, well, especially by clients, I think it might be spurred on by potentially misconceptions around things like semantic vectors, EAT, and how the whole keyword structure works. And that then goes into sort of a very basic information architecture and URL structure world. And that then goes down to the site structure. So I know there's a whole thing at the moment where if you just do like website.com/blog and then have the article off there, does it matter to Google, or will it see higher contextual relevance if you then start introducing categories to the URLs to say, this is a blog, this is a category, this is an article, or are they both pretty much the same in Google's eyes and it looks at other signals for that relevancy?
It's both pretty much the same. So I think it's good to, in general, focus on making clean URLs that are kind of understandable. But especially when you're looking at mobile phones, where most people are browsing, people tend not to see the URLs anyway. So most of the time, I imagine the people who see the URLs are mostly the people who are running the website, which is kind of a weird situation, I guess. But if you have clean URLs and we can pick those clean URLs as canonicals and we can show those in search, it's a lot easier for you to track. It's a lot easier to double check when things go wrong. So with that in mind, that's something where I would opt to focusing on URLs and making sure they're kind of good, but I wouldn't expect the URLs themselves to drive any specific ranking effect.
That's a very comprehensive answer. Thank you. So moving on to another one, which, and this is kind of Jamie covered a lot of this in regards to her talk on the critical rendering path, and that's around speed performance. And I'm going to go back a couple of years here. So SMX Munich in 2018, if we can do the sort of time warp effects now, and flashback scene. You said that Google was using performance data aggregated from opted in Chrome users as a sort of a data point in evaluating site speed and its effectiveness as a signal for rankings. So my twofold sort of point around this is those who missed Munich 2018, could you elaborate on what that was? And then secondly, has that process changed much in the last couple of years?
Okay, that was from before we were locked inside, right? It's like the previous world. It's like, oh man, we should just go back in time. It was so much nicer back then. Let's see. I think the part that specifically referred to is the use of the Chrome user experience data, which is something that I believe is generally collected through that mechanism, and also made available in. I think it's available for pretty much all sites to kind of look at as well. I don't know exactly where that goes in. That's also visible in the Page Speed Insights reports when you have kind of the site overview, and also in Search Console in the speed report that they have. It also uses kind of the similar data of people who are opted in to determine like what are people actually seeing. And from a ranking point of view, we use essentially two parts with regards to speed. On the one hand, the various kind of lab tests, where it's like you're running these speed tests on your machine with a good internet connection, and it's more about the theoretical performance. And on the other hand, we have the field data, which comes from places like the Chrome user experience data, where we see what people are actually seeing with regards to your site. And by using those two sources, we feel we have a reasonable understanding of how a site is doing with regards to speed. But obviously, the kind of exact metrics that are used and that are collected across those two things, that's something that still varies a little bit, because it's really hard to find really strong metrics that are representative of a website overall. So I think, I don't know, Martin mentioned this in one of the videos recently, is like for some sites, it's really important to have a very low kind of time to interactive. And for other sites, it's more important that there's a very low kind of time to first byte when that first piece of information is actually shown. And so that's something where it's hard to say, this is the one metric that should be used, or this is the kind of mix of metrics that needs to be used. I think that's something that needs to evolve a little bit over time.
With regards to evolving, and this kind of also goes into sort of the next question as well a little bit, because I know that moving into sort of 2019, the big Search Console revamp and the new dashboards of new tools is quite a big thing what Google's doing now. And I know it was something I believe you were personally quite excited about, because it was really updating an old tool very badly. How far along the revamp is it on that timeline? And also with that evolution, are there more sort of planned features which weren't in the old report still coming over, or anything that you can tell us about?
I think there are a number of features that are still in the old report that haven't been turned off. And my general kind of crystal ball view is, if we haven't turned them off already, then we think they're valuable. So probably they will move to the new Search Console at some point. The thing that we try to do with the new Search Console, though, is not just migrate features one-to-one, but rather kind of rethink what it is that people are trying to do with that. So one example for it is the crawl errors, for example, where in the past we would show you all of the crawl errors, and you would look at that and say, oh, this is important, this is irrelevant, and you try to figure that out yourself. And with the new Search Console, we shifted more towards the index coverage report, which kind of focuses on the end result. Like, you want things indexed. And if they didn't get indexed, why was that? And that's kind of the evolution that we want to do with Search Console, is to go a little bit more away from, like, here are 5 million pieces of data, and more towards, like, here's some information that can help you to kind of guide you in the right direction. It's not kind of like the one-stop place where it gives you a list of 5 things that you need to do in order to kind of rank number one, but it's a little bit closer to giving you more exact information on what you can do rather than just what we happen to run across. And I think that's something, like, for example, the crawl stats report, that's something where probably we want to go in a similar direction, where instead of just saying, like, this is how long it took to crawl, this is how many pages we crawled, maybe we could transform that into something more along the lines of, like, a crawl budget report or something like that, where people are essentially looking at the crawl stats report anyway with the mindset of, like, is there something I need to do here? And if so, do I need to improve my server? Do I need to kind of fix the status codes? And that's something where maybe we should just kind of take this guessing and implement it ourselves and give you more direct information on, well, here's how your site is standing with regards to crawling. Maybe it's not all of the individual milliseconds and URLs listed, but more like, well, this part of your site is OK, and this part is of your site is something that you need to work on.
OK, that sounds good. I've had that crawl report, sounds good as well. I'm thinking the uses in my head. I'd like that soon, please. One thing, I mean, staying on the Search Console sort of path, and one thing which was asked a lot on a couple of Slack groups, I mean, and then there's someone else in the chat asking about this a lot, and we've discussed it as a panel, and that is around voice search, because it was hyped for so many years and then fell like a lead balloon a little bit. Are there any plans for the differentiation as potentially a device model within Search Console for voice queries and the URLs which are pulling through voice queries to be in there? Because A, for data points attribution, but also because there is the speakable schema. And in my head, if there's a schema, then the schema could be validated in some way. And if it validates correctly, it'll produce data off the back of it. So are there any plans to include that within Search Console at all? Or?
I don't know of anything kind of like short term. I think it's kind of tricky because a lot of the voice usage in kind of in these assistant devices is not the same as the way that you would query in a browser, where you see like a number of results and you can like see the impressions and then track the clicks. With voice, it's very different. Like, sometimes we can just take a snippet and say that and kind of refer to that in the app so that people can look at the page, but it's hard to connect all of that. And it's also, I think, for most sites, hard to have sufficient data that they actually find something useful in that information at the moment. I think voice is one of those areas that will evolve quite significantly over the next years. I don't see it as something kind of like with mobile, where it's like everyone's using it, and then suddenly everyone realizes they've actually been using it. I think it's going to take a little bit more evolution until the engineers figure out how to make voice really useful. And with that, I imagine we'll have more data and more things that we can share in Search Console. I think the kind of structured data reporting things in Search Console, I could see that happening with kind of the speakable markup. But on the other hand, if there's no effect that we can report on in Search Console, it's kind of hard. It's like saying, like, you have all of this structured data on your site, but we can't tell you what it's doing. And you're doing the structured data right, or you're doing it wrong. And if you're doing it wrong, it's like, what are you missing out on? You don't really know. So that makes it a bit tricky.
That's just opening the floodgates to a plethora of other questions. Yeah. So a couple of other questions I wanted to go over with your time. One slightly probably having over. So I believe you've been with Google now, so what, 12, 13-ish years?
I think it's like 12. I don't know.
No. In your opinion, aside from obviously the pushes Google have made, like with mobile and things like, what have been the bigger sort of user changes you've seen, and how people are interacting with the web over that time?
It's hard to say. I thought about this a bit to kind of understand like what, or try to work out what I could pull out. I think mobile is kind of the obvious one, where everyone was waiting for the year of the mobile, and then it passed, and then it's like, oops. But I think one of the other changes that I see happening is just with the new generation of users that are using search engines, they just search very differently. So I see that every time I kind of interact with kind of younger kids around search to show things in search, they just search very differently in that they'll go to Google and they'll just ask a full question. And it's not like we would do, where we say like keyword one, keyword two, and then like if it doesn't work, we'll add another keyword to it. They essentially ask full sentences. And I think that's an interesting evolution, because it's something that a lot of the SEO community tends to skip over, because they so focus on like, I want to rank for this keyword or for this combination of keywords. And they don't realize that people actually search quite differently. And this is like the younger generation, and they're going to get older and become more kind of stronger users of search as well. So that kind of general shift of away from keyword towards more sentences, I think that's really fascinating. And I wanted to say something else, but forgot. I think that's something where it just makes it a little bit more interesting with regards to tracking performance and watching out how things perform.
And that's a really insightful and great answer. Was it right or wrong? But yeah, it's really, I learned a lot just from that going on. So one of the final things I wanted to ask you, and this is probably the thing I was asked most at the moment, you and everything going on across both Twitter, Slack, Reddit, etc. And Matt, that's just really around Google updates and the current situation. And effectively, the shorthand of the same question is have Google consciously, because I know obviously there's the daily updates, there's the ongoing core updates, etc. Is there a hesitancy within Google, but given everything going on, but there's a hesitancy to push a button which will potentially do a daily core update, which will be more noticeable and then be flagged as potentially a core update given what's going on? Is that something that is happening internally, or?
I don't think so. So at least I don't see that happening, because essentially these core updates are used to improve the quality of the search results. And if we can improve the quality of the search results, we shouldn't hold back on that, especially when people depend more on search. I think there are few effects or side effects or, I don't know, things that are happening additionally, though. On the one hand, there are lots of people that are working in search are working on kind of coronavirus-related things as well, to make sure that the critical search results are working really well. So maybe they're a little bit busy. On the other hand, all of the testers that we have for search changes, what are they called? The quality raters, they're probably more busy as well, or also kind of like tied in with other things and trying to find toilet paper and food and make sure that everything that they need for life otherwise is kind of taken care of. So they're a little bit more busy. And I think overall that just means that people are busy with other things at the moment. It's not that they've consciously decided to not make any change. So I could definitely see changes continuing to happen. And if we can find a way to improve the search results and we can confirm that it's actually working well, we will try to do that. It's not that we will hold back and say, well, SEOs will get confused and they'll be upset if we make this change. But on the other hand, users are really waiting to get better results. So it's like we should focus on the users first.
That makes a lot of sense. One final question just before you go, this just came from the chat, John, and this kind of probably goes back to the question for last with how generational change in how users are searching. And the question just around that is, when you said the younger generation, the sort of what rough sort of age bracket or millennial generation XYZ we put towards that?
I have no idea. So I just see it anecdotally. It's not that I have any kind of magic reports on that. So I've sometimes gone to schools to talk about search and how kind of the web works and how the systems work. And that's essentially where I see that happening. But I'm sure there's a fluid transition all the way up, where it's like the people who are just used to search being available all the time, they're probably not aware that it used to be a lot clunkier, that if you didn't search with keyword, that you would not get any useful results. And those who are kind of more used to using voice search, or kind of just more used to kind of the modern search engines that are able to understand sentences, they just like, it works, so why should you go back to something more kind of, I don't know, old school or more simple than you actually need?
No, that makes sense. So first I want to say thank you for your time. I appreciate this was extremely last minute. You're a gentleman for agreeing to come on with about 4 days notice. And yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to join in. And I think these kind of virtual events are a lot of fun, a lot easier than flying out. And I mean, nowadays, nobody flies anyway. But it's cool to be here.